get back into this big book study. John, are you going next? All right, let's all have our attention on John.
All right, I'm back. I like all these repeated introductions. Yeah, all right. Cool, so we've had a big day so far. And, you know, unfortunately, in the order of everything, I got stuck with the post-lunch session. So I'm fighting off the slump after that delicious Domino's. Man, I haven't had Domino's in a while. Domino's is good, though. That's how I was raised eating. That's all we ate growing up, you know, Domino's, Pizza Hut. We didn't have all these boutique chains that we have today. I like it. We're throwing it back. So Jared did an awesome job, as always, you know, getting into some detail around step 9. I did have some kind of follow-up ninth step thoughts. I had three thoughts. The first one actually came from a guy, Jason, who was here. I guess he came up and said he had to leave. But he just wanted to share an experience he had with an amends that he made. And it was, you know, it's not something that I've experienced personally, but I've had sponsees that have had similar experiences, and then I've had other people in AA share these experiences. And it was making an amends with someone that had passed away. You know, again, I haven't had to do this, so I'm not speaking from personal experience, but he shared his experience, and the experience I've heard from other people is that it can be one of the most powerful amends you can make, you know? And so I think it's something that should be addressed, and at the end of the day, people should just understand that just because someone is no longer with us, that amends can still be made, you know? And that amends can still be felt and processed, and, you know, cleaning up our side of the street can still happen. And, you know, what I was told when making those amends, you know, we basically follow that letter format and we write that letter, and we can take that letter to the grave and we can read that letter, or we can just make that amends from the heart, as Jared explained, graveside. And it can be just as powerful as making it in person, you know, and honestly, at the end of the day, it's just as critical. You know, if we're going to be thorough, if we're going to be entirely honest, we have to make all our amends. And that is one way we have to do it. So just wanted to mention that. I also, you know, the thought about the ninth step promises came up. We didn't talk about those. And you hear the ninth step promises mentioned a lot in AA. And I don't want to get into a bunch of detail around them, but I think it's just important to, you know, emphasize that they're attached to the ninth step. You know, I remember sitting in meetings when I was just going to meetings and not really doing any work and hearing those referred to as the AA promises, like the promises, you know? And with that, there are a lot of other promises throughout the book. We're about to take a look at some awesome promises attached to the 10th step. In addition to throughout all of our, you know, all of these chapters, there's promises everywhere, and they're beautiful. And the ninth step promises are awesome, but, you know, they come as a result of doing that work, you know, of making those amends. There's a reason they're in that part of the book. And for a while, when I was sitting in meetings, hearing those promises not attached to the ninth step, I'm wondering, like, what's going on? Why isn't this happening? Or on the flip side, I'm thinking, like, oh, just by being here, I'm gonna start experiencing these promises, you know? And the truth is, I'm not, if I'm not doing this work and getting through that process and out actively making amends, you know? It doesn't say specifically we have to make all our amends before we start experiencing them. I think we can definitely start experiencing them as we're making amends. You know, it says before we are halfway through. But, you know, I think it's just crucial to understand that we have to be in the work, getting connected to God to start experiencing these amazing promises. Lastly, when it comes to amends, I just think it's important to reiterate, you know, sponsorship in amends and making sure that you're, you know, just in touch with your sponsor about amends. You're, you know, double checking your motives. You're getting clear-cut direction on how you are to make the amends, how you approach these people. There are obviously some people that it's just cut and dry. I don't call Jared every time I go make an amends. But for especially the ones that are maybe a little bit more complicated, past relationships with, significant others, that type of thing, I want to be very clear on the amends I'm making. So I just want to make sure that I'm in touch with my sponsor and I'm seeking out, sponsorship when I'm making those amends. So that brings us to step 10. As we are out making amends, and basically how Jared did it with me and how I do it with the guys that I sponsor, I went out and made those initial couple amends that first weekend and everything went well. And then Jared and I spent some time taking a look at 10, 11, and starting to introduce 12. And, it gives us pretty clear-cut directions into action on page 84. About halfway down the page, it starts out, "This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along." So, did anyone get 10 and 11 confused at any point? Yeah? Yeah, I definitely did. I thought the nightly inventory was the 10th step for a while. I thought it was like the same thing, and then like 11, maybe some prayer and meditation. I didn't really understand the mechanics of it. And I think it's extremely important to put all of this into play if you really want to hold on to, that serenity that you find as a result of doing this work. It adds another layer in life that it's just like anything else, it's another tool that we have to get through life and to see what's blocking us from God. It can be tricky. Jared mentioned earlier 10, 11, and 12 as the disciplines. Just like anything else, discipline is going to take a little bit of time. But the more we do it, the closer we stay to it, the more second nature it becomes. So especially early on, when I'm going through this process, whatever I have to do to stay disciplined to it is crucial. For me, it might mean making a post-it note on my bathroom window or mirror, just reminding me to get in touch with God in the morning, reminding me to pause throughout the day, things like that. But at the end of the day, it can take some time and it can take some negative emotions and negative consequences to really kick that discipline into gear. But let's continue reading in the book. It says, "We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past." So here it's telling us as we are making amends. We don't wait to make all our amends to then get into 10, 11, and 12. As we cleaned up the past, as we're out making those amends, we need to get into this practice of 10. It goes on to say, "Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately, and we make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code." So, that gives us very precise instructions on how to handle this. And the way I think of 10 is, I am always practicing 10, day in and day out. That needs to be in the back, if not the front of my mind. It needs to be, in my conscious as I'm going throughout the day. And it's going to give us some more instruction in 11 on how to get through the day. But I need to be always on the lookout for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Because it doesn't say if these crop up, it says when these crop up. These things are going to crop up. It is going to happen. And when they do, they then give us very clear-cut directions on what we do. And we know how to look at these, and we know how to recognize these thanks to the fourth and fifth step. You know, going through that inventory process, we now know how to analyze our life and analyze, you know, these feelings, these emotions, and these scenarios that we experience and what to do about it. And it's basically the same process, you know? When I'm going, and so this happened to me, a good one, you know, it can be tricky sometimes because, you know, little things kind of spur up every once in a while, and I'm like, do I need to pray and then step away and call Jared and get clear on it and then, you know, try and direct my thoughts to helping someone else? I mean, you got to kind of find your rhythm, but I had a pretty big one come up. It was probably about 3 months ago, and it was at work. It was with a coworker, and basically he was being criticized about, you know, a decision that he made and had the authority to make that affected me and some others in the company and, you know, what we did. But he had his reasons and feelings attached to it, and they were totally valid. We disagreed, and another coworker of mine called him out on it. And, you know, he was explaining, you know, emotionally, like, hey, this is what we need to do, and this is why we need to do it. And, you know, it's not about me. It's not about, you know, how I feel about it. It's just, this is what's best for this situation. And personally upset by it, I kind of jumped on with my coworker and like doubled down and, you know, mildly insulted him as a result. And, you know, and then like more people jumped on, and then he ended up getting really upset and left. And I immediately knew like that was not okay. I was so wrong in saying that, you know, that was so unnecessary. And I felt it internally. I felt it. I felt awful about it. And I stepped away. I prayed about it. I called Jared. He wasn't available. I left on his voicemail, which is what we do sometimes. I knew I had no question that I was wrong in this element, and that I had ultimately harmed this guy. And I then went through the instructions and practiced. We discussed them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we harmed anyone. You know, and the amends part, like going through the ninth step, can be challenging, you know. But again, it's crucial because just praying about it and talking to Jared about it, I was clear on it, but I was still feeling it. You know, I could still internally feel that harm. I still felt awful about it. And the guy had left the office to go have lunch and just, you know, take a time out. And so I couldn't, you know, get to him right away. And so I had to sit with it for about an hour until he got back. And I felt it, you know, and I tried to direct my thoughts to helping someone else, thinking about someone else in that moment. But, you know, even that will only get us so far. The guy came back. I grabbed him. We went to a conference room. I explained, I broke it down just like Jared did with the amends. I specifically mentioned what I did. I let him know that I harmed him and that I sincerely regretted it. And I asked him how I could make it right. And, you know, it ended up not being a huge deal. He was just really appreciative that I recognized it and I was facing him to try and talk through our differences, you know, and that's ultimately what we did. And after doing that, I was able to see his part of it and see why he made that decision, you know, and at that point it was just water under the bridge. But, you know, that's why this 10th step is so crucial, because if I had done that and let that go and just tried to ignore it, it would have messed me up for the rest of the day. You know, I would have been off. I would have been spiritually disconnected. And who knows what else would have happened? You know, I probably would have been irritable, discontent. All of those things would have come true once again. And who else? I mean, that could have turned into, you know, 5 more 10 steps. Who knows? You know, that's why we have to do this stuff as it comes up, as it crops out, and we have to be aware of it. The other cool thing about the 10th step that, you know, like all the other promises, only comes when we're, you know, actively practicing it, is in the paragraph just after the one I read. It says, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition." You know, so it has that condition right at the end. But, you know, the promise itself is pretty cool because, you know, initially I came to AA because of my drinking, right? And this inability to control how much I drank and inability to stay away from it. And, you know, pretty quickly in practicing these steps, starting to practice 10, the thought of alcohol, the, you know, insanity around drinking, the, you know, feeling uncomfortable in certain situations around alcohol, all of that has been removed. You know, technically, provided I'm in fit spiritual condition, I can go anywhere and do anything. You know, alcohol is no longer a factor. I'm neutral when it comes to alcohol. That's a really cool promise, you know, to come from being just insane when it came to alcohol to being totally neutral and able to go on and live and enjoy my life is amazing. I mean, that's just such a great promise. But it has that condition, as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And 10 is a big piece of that. That's how we stay fit, stay spiritually fit. You know, that, 11, and then of course 12. But we start with 10. It then goes on to say, "It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will." So, you know, this daily reprieve is something that, you know, again, factors into this discipline. It's attached to the discipline of taking action in 10, 11, and 12. And ironically, when this, you know, this 10th step that I just talked about happened, you know, I just started working at this job and I had started to rest on my laurels. You know, the end of last year is when I was laid off for the first time. I spent the first 2 months looking for another job. I just found this job, started March 1st. And, you know, I feel like my recovery has kind of done this a little bit. You know, it's like you get comfortable and then, you know, especially in the first few years, you get comfortable and you're still getting that discipline, figuring it out. And I was kind of in a lull at this point. So in hindsight, it made a lot of sense. You know, it made a lot of sense as to why I reacted that way, why I had to do the 10th step in the first place. But, you know, it was a thankfully a subtle reminder as to why I have to stay disciplined as much as possible and doing this daily, you know, and where 10 and 11 specifically come into play. Because another thing I'll say, and we'll talk about this more, I'm sure, when we get into 12, you know, we're very heavy in part, you know, the part of 12 is carrying the message. You know, Jared and I have commitments weekly, sometimes twice a week, carrying the message to detoxes and treatment centers. You know, I'm very heavy in carrying the message. And that is great. It's a great action that we have that, you know, allows us to build on this spiritual connection that we have. But if I'm letting up on 10 and 11, 12 isn't going to be as solid. You know, 12 isn't going to work alone. We need to have all of it in play. You know, 10, 11, and 12. I'm doing well. I'm experiencing these promises. I'm experiencing this daily reprieve, this neutrality when it comes to alcohol, when I have 10, 11, and 12 in action. You know, it is conditional in that way. And it can be tough to find that balance sometimes, but that's what we have to strive for. We have to strive for balance amongst all three of those steps and just staying connected. That's what it's all about. What else with 10? I think that's all I got with 10. If Jared has some more to add when he comes back up here, he can roll through it. But we then go to 11. You know, step 11 starts at the bottom of 85, and it says step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. You know, and as I've shared, when I was going through the work, coming into this, I had no understanding or belief in God or a higher power. By this point, I was starting to believe. You know, I was starting to sense this power, as I've shared. And it was such a cool feeling. And I was totally on board in increasing it. But the words prayer and meditation for me were a little bit daunting, you know, because I still wasn't fully there. And I didn't understand meditation. I had all these kind of random ideas about things I had seen and heard and all of that. Prayer, I still just felt a little bit awkward at times and felt like I didn't know what to say, even though in hindsight, it's just so silly. But that's how I felt. And if you or anyone you're starting to work with or working with experiences that as well, the cool thing is it's all right here and in other places throughout this book. You know, as it tells us in We Agnostics, you know, that's what this book is about, all about. And it gives us all of these prayers and then gives us some specific meditation, at least a foundational meditation to practice every day. You know, when it came to prayer, it was just suggested at first that, you know, I start practicing it, obviously, in that third step. In the fourth step, as I'm sitting down to write inventory, God, please help me write this inventory. You know, it even started before that, just asking God in the morning to keep me sober. You know, those first, like that first week, I was doing that, you know, and with that, it started to develop and build on itself. To the point where, you know, by the time I was starting to get into 10 and 11, I was really just dedicating some time to, you know, prayer in the morning and just getting in touch with God. And I used, you know, bits and pieces, like a piece of the third step prayer, a piece of the seventh step prayer, asking God to help me see and make those amends. Asking God to help me practice love and tolerance towards others. Asking God to remove, you know, my resentments, remove my fears. Helping me be honest instead of dishonest. You know, just simple things like that. And that's still part of my morning prayer, you know. And in the evening, just thanking God for, you know, for the day. Thanking God for helping me see those things. And, you know, when we get into when we retire at night, we'll branch out on that. But just, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's all right here. And specifically when it comes to meditation, you know, I kind of thought of like the, you know, meditation and I need to, you know, sit, you know, Indian style on the floor and have my, you know, have my arms on my knees and that kind of thing. You know, that's kind of how I thought of meditation. I was like, I can't keep my mind quiet. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. But when this book was written, meditation technically, you know, was defined as to engage in contemplation or reflection. You know, it's really just as simple as that. And it's giving us specific things. It's giving us direction on what to contemplate. You know, it's giving us, again, a foundation. You know, it starts out when we retire at night, which leads me to believe that, you know, in the order of practicing this, You know, when Jared gave me direction in the middle of the day, my next time to practice this was at night, you know? So people ask why it's, you know, when we retire at night and then on awakening. I think that's why. But it says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So this is very, very clear on what I need to focus on. And this is really the quote-unquote nightly inventory, you know? And, you know, some people start writing this out. Some people write this out nightly for the rest of their life. That's cool. If that's how you roll, that's great. I, at times, have gone to paper with this, and it's been beneficial. There are times when I, you know, I read it, I have a lot of it memorized, but, you know, at the end of the day, as long as I'm dedicating some time to this and running through this checklist, I'm okay, you know? If there's a lot going on and I've let up for like a week, then I might need to sit down and write some stuff out and maybe have a conversation with Jared about it and take a closer look. But at the end of the day, it's interesting how these, I might have days where it's like, man, I'm a mess. You know, I check all these off. I need to take a look at a lot of different things. There are times when I had a good day, you know, and I was on point and I was feeling the power and, you know, I wasn't feeling resentful. Selfish is a tough one, man. I feel like, I mean, we're just like innately selfish, you know? We can always identify some selfishness, you know? So if I'm really being honest and thorough, I'm always going to find selfishness when I practice this. Was I kind and loving toward all? That can be challenging as well. What could I have done better? I feel like there's always things I could do better, you know? I mean, there's so many parts in this inventory that I can meditate, that I can contemplate, and work on myself and ask God to remove things and to show up in my life. You know, there's just always so much room to grow, especially early on, you know? There's so many different things I could see. You know, I definitely don't go through life thinking about what I could do for others at all times, you know? I feel like it's one of those questions that, like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to check that off. You know, I don't know if I'll ever be able to get through a day like that. You know, some days are better than others, but, you know, at the end of the day, again, I think that this is just designed to always challenge us to stay close to God and remind us that, you know, this is an ongoing thing. We're never, you know, you hear we continue to seek God. It's like I've heard people say, like, you're never going to really find God. You have to continue seeking him. You know, or seeking it, you know, and that takes action, and that's going to be continuous action until I die. Once I had gone through this the first time, again, it became a little bit easier and a little bit easier. And the other cool thing about this, you know, I struggle with sleep and insomnia at times. And insomnia is a real thing. I don't want to, like, discount it. But I found that when I actually practice this, I fall asleep a lot easier most of the time. You know, if I'm struggling with sleep, if my mind's racing when I'm going to bed, I probably haven't done this. And if I have, I've probably half-assed it, and I need to go back and take another look. You know, it's really cool that it does come at the end of the day, because that's typically where I struggle, you know. And it's a great, great red flag that we can have built in. It's like when I lay down and I'm exhausted, but I can't quiet my mind. Here we go. Just pull out the book, get into it, and really add on the prayer that we're going to get into ask God to remove it. You know, I'm not going to call Jared at the, you know, if there's something huge going on, I might try and reach out to him. Might send him a text like, hey, we need to connect first thing in the morning. But, you know, I might not call him right away. But, you know, just even in practicing just the prayer, you know, and directing my thoughts to someone else, I start to feel a little bit of relief about it, you know, and then I can get clear on it the next day. So that allows me to go to sleep. And then on awakening, this continues about halfway down 86, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So, on awakening, you know, an early book study that I went to with J.K., Jared's sponsor, and another guy, you know, I remember hearing this, and, you know, they really emphasize on awakening. So, like, as soon as, when I wake up, as soon as I open my eyes, you know, not I wake up, I grab my phone, I start flipping through emails or texts or social media, and then I get up, I use the restroom, I maybe get some breakfast going, I get my coffee going. You know, especially in the beginning, as soon as I open my eyes and like grab that phone or got up, I'm immediately just in self, you know? That's immediately just kicked into full gear. And I get distracted. And you know, even today when I let up, when I'm not as disciplined with this stuff, you know, that's what I reach for. And it's just a rough way to start the day. You know, that's typically when that stuff that I just explained starts to happen, you know? So the discipline in on awakening is really getting connected right off the bat. And I might not practice the full meditation, you know, I might not just like open my eyes and roll out of bed and just roll right into meditation. But when I open my eyes and I wake up, you know, my first thought is getting connected to God, you know, just a simple prayer, you know, God, thank you for today. Please be with me today. Just something simple like that. Just getting that mindset going. And then going about getting some coffee, going to the restroom, whatever I need to do. But then, you know, spending some time in actual meditation and considering our plans for the day, you know, taking a look at my schedule, taking a look at what needs to be done, getting into that longer format prayer when I'm getting plugged in, you know, around the third step, around the seventh step, around my amends. Taking a look at, you know, the opportunities I have with men I'm working with, opportunities I have carrying the message, just getting all of that, you know, top of mind, and focusing a little bit less on perhaps the selfish things that I think I want to do or feel like I need to do that day, you know. And I don't want to say I'm not going to do anything but this. I mean, that's obviously not realistic. But, you know, getting all of those things in place and, again, top of mind, asking God for direction throughout the day, especially in those areas of my life. It goes on to say at the bottom of 86, we may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. So, you know, this is a cool little promise as well. You know, the more I put this into practice, the more God-reliant and God conscious I'm going to become. You know, the more I can go about my day free of resentment, free of dishonesty, free of these defects of character. It also provides me with direction and the ability to see where I can be selfless, see where I can be helpful to others instead of selfish and take away from others or harm others. It allows me to handle situations in my personal life, my professional life, my recovery life. I mean, it keeps me plugged in and conscious to where I can be of service. As Jared said, it's all about, you know, staying connected, getting connected, and helping God's kids. It helps me be present, you know? It's what all of this is all about. It ties it all together. And, you know, again, when I let up on this, when I don't practice this, specifically out of the book, is when I typically run into trouble and end up with a lot of 10 steps in the day, you know? But if I'm just keep it as simple and foundational as 86 through 88, life tends to go pretty well. 87 in the second paragraph says, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we may be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. So this was, you know, challenging, because it, you know, even though I was agnostic, at times, you know, I'd say those foxhole selfish prayers, you know, God, just get me out of this, or God, help this job work out for me, or you know, I'm short on cash, help me find some money, you know, just all these selfish prayers that conveniently would be there when I needed them. And it can be tricky, because when I started practicing prayer, you know, I would still get close to that self-centered, selfish prayer, you know, instead of praying for, you know, my job to go well and to treat me right, I needed to be praying about how I could show up to work and be helpful, you know, just switching that kind of my, I guess, objective in prayer a little bit, you know, and it still flares up from time to time. Another good one is, you know, we're told, and it gives us the sick man prayer. And upon initial glance, I think, like, I need to pray for that person. You know, I need to pray for whatever the outcome I want it to be, you know? And it really doesn't say that. It says, pray and ask God to see how I can help that person, you know? That's where our prayer needs to come from. That's what we need to be seeking, you know? When I'm going through this career change right now and looking for a job, I do pray about that. But I ask God to show me and help me find a job where I can be most helpful at, you know? Where can I do good? And that's, I mean, ultimately when I think about it, like, that's where I want to be, you know? That's what I want to find. It's not all about the money. It's not all about, you know, the commute, all of that. It's really getting oriented to how can I be more helpful to God and God's kids, you know? And where it might not mean I'm gonna go work in a treatment center and do that, you know, but it's just having that mentality can open my eyes and open my heart to those opportunities. And it can become an easier decision when I'm faced with that. It goes on page 87 to say, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives, our friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. I like how it says also, and that was another thing JK pointed out. You know, it leads us to believe that we need to be doing this, and if we are religious and we have some other, you know, devotional or something like that, we do that in addition to this, you know? I need to keep this in my daily practice, and when I add on different things as it goes on to say, even if we aren't religious, there are other things we can add on to it to, you know, enlighten us and build on this experience. I need to attend to that also, but I need to stick to this. You know, I also have a, you know, like the 24 hours a day book. I have some different books that I read, and I factor that into my meditation. And that's great. But at the end of the day, I really just need to keep it to this and then add on from that as time allows. You know, at a bare minimum, I need to be doing this. When I'm super busy and a lot's going on with life, as long as I'm staying close to this, all is well. If I have more time, and as I progress through this program and I can devote more time, and I ultimately find that I require more time to grow this connection with God, I do that. So it says, if not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. So like I said, I mean, there's, you know, if you are religious, there are a lot, the Bible, you know, there are all types of devotionals. There's all sorts of online resources. And there's a really cool one that I downloaded recently called Practice These Principles that actually is a daily devotional, and it pulls, you know, from our it pulls from the big book, basically, you know, and pulls specific pieces of text and then provides kind of solution-oriented devotional or meditation to look at. And I really enjoy that. Just, again, trying to get more and more familiar with this text. I find that very helpful. If you guys want more information on that, I've got it on my phone so I can show you in between sessions. So it then goes on 87 to say, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times a day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, our foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It worked. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. So, you know, again, it's all just about this discipline. And, you know, it gives us some more thought and something, again, that I can bring into that morning prayer. You know, ask God for some help with that pause. You know, you hear about the power of the pause. It's such a helpful tool, you know. But, like, conveniently, at times I forget about it. You know, I get all worked up and then I'm like, wait a minute, you know, like 10, 20 minutes into, I'm like, wait a minute, I just need to like take a time out, you know, maybe I need to step away, say a prayer, get connected, take a look at some things, whatever it might look like. But I can ask God for help in the morning. You know, it's another thing I can bolt on to my daily prayer and meditation. And again, when I do that, I stay free. I find that, again, like anything with this, when I actually practice this as it's outlined, it works, it really does, as it says on page 88. So with that, we end page 88 by them starting to introduce us to working with others. We're gonna go ahead and take a 10-minute break, and then we will reconvene for Jared getting us started with step 12 and working with others. Thank you.